how we doing? You sure? Hey, it's good to be. Thanks, Brian, for that great introduction. It's so great to be with Academy Christian Church today. We have admired you from a distance, not a very long distance, for a long, long time. I just want to say, hey, thank you for all you have done and you continue to do in our city of Colorado Springs. You are making a difference. 16 years ago, when I came to Colorado Springs, I would have never thought that Brian would become one of my very best pastor friends in our city. His support and his encouragement over these years, and yours too, ACC, has made a big difference for us at Discovery Church. And so grateful for you. Just want to say thank you for that. Stacy, my wife, is with me today. We are grateful and honored to be in the presence of kingdom heroes like you. We don't have a lot of time together today, not as much as I'm used to. So I want to get right to it. I want to jump into it today with a question. What if a part of the path that actually leads us to the life that we want, that we all came in here looking for today, really is found in the rest of our stories? Let's jump into this together and let's talk some more about that. If you brought a Bible, we're going to be in the book of John today. We're actually going to pop around a little bit, but we're going to start in the book of John, chapter 10 today. We're going to actually start in a place where Jesus actually captures the essence of each and every one of our stories in one simple verse. I'm talking about John chapter 10, verse 10. Let's read it together. Here we go. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. So I want to start today in an unconventional way. I want to start with the last half of that verse, the statement by Jesus. Jesus says basically, hey, you need to know this. Here's what I came to this earth to do. I came to give you life. Now, the Greek word here for life is zoe. It means a real life, a genuine life, an abundant life, like life to the fullest. Jesus says, this is what I came to give you. So here's my question for us today. Is that an honest description of our lives today? Is it? Is it? No judgment. I'm just asking you the question. Is this an honest description? Because for most of us, I mean, you may say, yes, that's my life. And if so, fist bump, high five to you, way to go. But for most of us, the answer is no, right? For many of us, the answer is not even close. And but there's something about it, like we're scared to admit that. It's like, am I really supposed to say that in church? I just want to tell you, for some of us, most of us, you might be the exception. I think for all of us, there is a gap today between the life that we're living and the life that we want. So here's my question. What are we doing about that? How are we addressing that in our lives and stories? Brings me to the question, how am I addressing the gap between the life I'm living and the life I actually want? And here's the answer. We're turning to a whole lot of things and a whole lot of stuff to do that. And we're not the only ones, right? People in the world around us, they do it too. We turn to success, we turn to money and power and significance and cars and houses and sex and substances. We turn to all kinds of stuff. This is my story. I know, because that's my story. About 20 years ago, I was in the first year of the church that I was leading, the church that I had planted about a year before. I got a phone call from a friend, and he led a pretty big church in Washington, D.C. And he said, hey, Greg, I want to fly you into Washington, D.C. I want you to speak. I'm going to gather 500 or 600 leaders from our church, and I want you to speak to them. I want you to tell the story. I'm going to bring in 3 other church planters. I want you to tell the story of the amazing things that God's doing in your church. I was so excited. It was like, man, I get to go and share this story somewhere else. So I went, I did my thing. I had a blast doing it. I'm sitting on a plane and I'm flying back home because I got to preach the next morning back in North Carolina. And as I was sitting there, I thought, I'm just going to grab my sermon notes and review my sermon, because that's kind of what pastors do. But this sense of uneasiness started to come over me that I really couldn't shake. And I started to think about those 3 other pastors, church planters, that I had just shared a stage with, and how they had something in their life that I was missing. They had a joy and a sense of peace and a contentment. They seemed to be comfortable in their own skin. I was like, something is wrong here. Here I am. I found my calling. I was a trial attorney for 10 years back in Kentucky and Indiana before I became a pastor. And when I became a pastor, I'm like, this is it. I am all in. I loved our church. Our church was growing. So here I am. I'm leading this successful, growing church. But like the U2 song, which is a great song, by the way, I still hadn't found what I was looking for. You ever been there in your life? Yeah, some of us, if we're honest, that's where we're sitting today. A few months after that, I was sitting in my driveway on a Friday afternoon, and I was getting ready to go into the house, and I was trying to figure out how I was going to walk in the house, tell my beautiful wife, Stacy, who I'd been married to at the time for 20, 21 years, that I had had an affair, had just resigned as the pastor of the church, and totally and completely destroyed our lives. But see, this is why I say this all the time. Jesus and Stacy are the heroes of the story. And she's here today with me. You want to ask her about her perspective on that moment or any of this journey over the last 19, 20 years? She's going to be out in the lobby with me. She actually wrote a section at the end of the book where she talks about it and gives her perspective. And so here's what I started to learn. As you can imagine, my life was hell. But here's what I started to learn with the help of a great counselor and a few special friends. The answer to all the questions, there were lots of questions. I had them too. How could I do this? How could I do this to the woman that I loved? How could I do this to my four beautiful daughters who were like ages 12 to 2 or something like that at the time? How could I do it to the church? The people in this church that I love so much, how could I do this? Why did I do it? The answer to all the questions were to be found in a part of my story that I'd never even considered. I'd never heard it really taught or addressed in a church. I've been in church my whole life. I'm not faulting any church or any pastor. I just never heard it before. I was aware of my sin. I was aware of every mistake I'd ever made, everything I'd done, my uh-ohs, my blew it up, my wish I hadn't done that. Come on, we have trouble forgetting those things. But here's the question. What about all of the things in my 40 years of life that had been done to me, not just the things I'd done, the things that had been done to me, and said about me? I had never once given any consideration in my life to that. Not once. Had never thought about that stuff. And so here's what I discovered. Discovering the path that ultimately leads me to the life that I want, that is available to me in Jesus, requires me to take a journey. If I want to close the gap in my life between the life I'm living and the life I want, I have to take a journey back into and through the rest of my story. And so I want to say this to you today. If there's an emptiness inside of you, it's okay to admit that, right? If you still haven't found what you're looking for, if you still, despite your very, very best Christian efforts, despite the fact that you show up here on a Sunday, Sunday after Sunday, more often than not, way to go, by the way, because most people don't do that anymore. But if you haven't found it, what if the answer is not found in looking around? At the things that the world is looking at, success and power and money and prestige and education, all these things, even the things we turn to in the church, this study, not knocking this stuff, but what if the answer is not found in looking around? What if the answer is truly found when you start looking within? I'm telling you, this is game-changing stuff. Every train wreck in your life, every head-on collision presents an opportunity for you. There is opportunity in every disaster in your life. Now, it's going to take some digging. It's going to take some exploration, some excavation. And at times, it's going to be really hard. It's going to take some real effort. Are you going to want to quit? Because at times, it's going to involve some real pain. There will be times, as you start to dig in your story, that you want to hit the eject button and just get out. Abandon the journey altogether. I know, because I felt it and I've seen it in hundreds of people that we've helped walk into their stories. It's just real. But what if there's no detour? Right? What if there's actually no way around it? What if the life you actually want and that you're looking for requires a journey back into and through your story? Now, I want to point to a couple other quick verses here before we lock this thing down, okay? I think they're going to be really helpful for us. The first is in Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Paul writes this. He says, "Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." Now, so Paul says, hey, let me tell you about what this life that you actually want, what it looks like. First of all, it involves sacrifice, which by definition means it is not going to be easy. See, I don't know about you, but what I've discovered in this life of following Jesus is this. It's seldom easier and always better. Seldom easier, always better. Paul says you need to know that. And then he says you also need to know this. Hey, don't try to do it the way the world's trying to do it. Don't turn to the things the world is turning to. Don't be conformed to their patterns to try to find the life that you want. He said, remember, it's all about transformation. So when we read this, we start to consider what Paul's trying to push us towards here, what he's saying to us. Here's the question. I'm going to give you three choices. Accumulation of information, behavior modification, or transformation. Which is it? Now, not which should it be, because a lot of us know the answer to that. But which of those three things actually best describes me? No judgment whatsoever in that. No, which best describes me? Which best describes my church life, my religious life, what life with Jesus has actually become for me? Because what does Paul tell us? See, here's the reason I ask that question. Because we cannot believe and behave our way to the life that we want, the life that's available to us. You can't do it. I'm not saying believing is not important. It is. It's important we believe the right things. I'm not saying behaving ourselves is not important. Obedience is important. I'm just saying that those two things alone only take you part of the way there. What does Paul say? He says transformation comes not as we fill our minds within church world. Honestly, a lot of people, that's what we're trying to do, right? Feed me, feed me, feed me. How many people leave churches today? I just wasn't being fed there. You ever heard that? Paul says transformation doesn't come as you fill your mind. He says it comes as you renew your mind. The Greek word here means renovation, a total and complete change of mind for the better. You know why Rob Paul says that? Because he realizes what we're up against. You know what we're up against? Here it is. There is some jacked up thinking in all of our stories. There is some jacked up thinking in every single one of our stories. And I'm not talking about what we think about church. I'm not talking about what we think about religion. I'm not even talking about what we think about Jesus. That is not what is most working against me. You know what it is? It's actually what I think about me. It's what I think about me. I want to go back to John 10:10, where we started the journey. Let's go to the first part of the verse. Jesus says, hey, you need to understand this. There's a thief in your story who wants to steal from you, kill you, and destroy you. Now, there are lots of descriptions of the enemy in each of our stories in the Bible, right? He's a red dragon, and he's a giant dragon in Revelation chapter 12. He prowls around like a lion. It says, I like that, like a lion, because he's really not one. He's kind of weak. He's a poser. You know, we know who the roaring lion is that we sang about this morning, the Lion of Judah. His name is Jesus, and the enemy's nothing. It's kind of like Lion King, the movie. Anybody like Lion King besides me? It's the difference between Scar and Mufasa. You see it? So he's opposing lion, but this thief description is actually my favorite description of the enemy in our stories. You want to know why? Check this out. Because in order for a thief to be successful, you don't realize what he's doing to you as he's doing it. So let me ask you a question. When's the last time you didn't realize you were being tempted? So what is he up to? And the answer to that question is never. What is it he's up to that we're not seeing? That's the question. This enemy wants to steal from us. What's he trying to steal from us? Our innocence? Yes. Our purity? Yes. Our trust in God? Of course. Our relationship with God? Yes. Our relationships with each other? We can add a lot of things to the list. Can I tell you what the enemy in your story is most trying to steal from you every single day of your life? Your ability to look in the mirror and see yourself as God sees you. See yourself as unconditionally loved, no matter what. See yourself as constantly being pursued by God, relentless pursuit of you. He sees you and he says, I'm never going to give up on that guy. There's nothing that's ever going to separate me from his love. And so here's what this broken pastor about 20 years ago, sitting in his driveway, getting ready to go in and destroy his family and break his wife's heart, to crush it, to stomp it on the ground, trying to figure out what he's going to say. Here's what he believed to be true. You ready? I am weak. And I will never be strong. And I will never have what it takes to be a man. And I will always be ugly. And I will never be enough. And there's no woman that will ever be attracted to me. That's the rest of my story. It's a part of the rest of my story. part I'd never considered. That was the theme song. That was the background music that the enemy, that was the record that the enemy had been spinning in the background during the course of my life. In numerous moments of hurt and pain over the course of my life, these messages came that ultimately I agreed with in my life. And so the enemy starts connecting the dots and building the case against me. This is who he is and what he does. And so we make these agreements. And then over the course of time, messages become agreements. Agreements become these things called footholds in our lives. Now, Paul talks about this. He talks about this thief. And he says, you got to be aware of this thief in your life. You got to be aware of this enemy's schemes. Methodia is the Greek word here. It means his method, his strategy, his scheme in your life. You need to be aware of this stuff. Now, Paul goes on. Here's the thing. When I get to heaven someday, I'm going to talk to Paul and I'm going to say, hey, buddy, with all due respect to the great things you wrote, I think it would have been helpful in Ephesians 6 where you say, be aware of his schemes. If you would have just spent a paragraph telling us what that is, right? Because here's the thing. Paul actually tells us you just got to pull some stuff together. And that's what I do in chapter 3 of the book, right? It's called The Only Easy Day Was Yesterday. You know why I call it that? Because that's true of our lives as we try to follow Jesus. And because it's a Navy SEAL motto. And I have mad respect for those guys. But in the end, here it is. These unaddressed footholds in my life, Greg Lindsay's life, ultimately crushed and devastated the people in this world that I love the most. It just took them out. See, here's what you got to understand about this temptation thing. I'm not minimizing temptation because it leads to sin, and Jesus had to die for our sin, so it's a big deal. But you are most tempted where you are most broken. You want to know why? Because this temptation comes to you, and it seems to offer some medication for the pain that you're experiencing in your life because of the agreements you've made and these footholds and strongholds that exist in your life. It seems to suggest to you, hey, do this, take this, whatever it might be. Hey, I'm offering to help you prove that that agreement that you're weak and you'll never be strong, whatever it might be, I'm offering to help you prove that it's not true. When these things, These footholds that the enemy has in our lives, when they are unnoticed and unaddressed, they become strongholds, permanent places from the enemy to operate from in our stories that according to Paul says, he says, you know what? You got to blow that stuff up. You got to demolish that stuff. So that's great, but how do we do it? Paul actually helps us with that. He not only tells us there's a scheme, a strategy, he not only kind of unpacks the scheme for us. We don't have time to unpack it all today, but I'm giving you some of it. He also offers us some hope because he says, here's how you go after this. This is 2 Corinthians 10 now, verse 5. Paul says, we demolish arguments, agreements, and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. Is this consistent with God's voice in my life? With who he sees when he sees me looking in the mirror? Not what I see, but what he sees. And then, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. Here's why I think we get hung up here. When we hear obedience, we think temptation. That's where we go. Oh, yeah, I got to capture this thought and say no to this thought. No, but it applies to all of our thinking. Like this thought comes, I am weak. Boom, hold on a second. Wait, I'm going to capture the thought. Does this sound like Jesus or does it sound like somebody else? See, here's what we got to understand. The enemy in each and every one of our stories cares so much less about what we do than he does about how we see ourselves because of what we've done. Think about it. How much of your sin did Jesus cover on the cross? Last time I checked, all of it. Right, every bit. Today's, yesterday's, tomorrow's, covered by the blood of Jesus. Don't you think the enemy knows that? He's kind of smart. And so the sin is gone, but what happens? Go back to Genesis chapters 3. Shame remains. And see, here's the thing. The enemy knows that he can do so much damage in your life and story over the course of your life with that. And this is why helping people discover their stories is the first piece of our mission statement over at Discovery Church. the path that will ultimately lead you to the life that Jesus came to bring you, the life that you want, really does require us to take a journey back into and through the rest of your story, the part that maybe you've never even thought about before. Now, here's the thing I want to say about that. You may want to invite a counselor to take that journey with you. No shame in that. No shame in that. Great counseling changed my life forever. It will yours too. What if the rest of your story, from this day forward, your future really does depend on the healing that you experience from Jesus in the rest of your story, from this day back, your past? I promise you it does. Last question for today. You ready? Talked a lot about my story. What's your story? What's your story? You'll never really matter. You'll never be enough. You'll never be good enough, smart enough, good looking enough, strong enough. You're always going to be alone. You'll never have that special someone in your life. You're not worth the time of day. You'll never be desired. You'll never be really pursued. You're not worth pursuing. You're never going to amount to anything. You will always be second or third or fourth or fifth or last choice. You're a failure. You're a screw up. You're a disaster. You're good for only one thing. You're good for absolutely nothing. You will always be blank. You will never be blank. What's your story? What's your story? Here's what you need to know. Jesus cares about every moment of that. And what he wants to do is he wants to walk into that, every moment of that, with you. I want to end today by helping you hopefully take a step into your story. To begin to start to just, okay, what's this look like for me? To start to dig a little bit. Before we leave here today, I want to just give you a tool that I think that will help you do that. 6 steps to help you move more towards the life that you want. Okay, now it's in the book, but you may never buy a book. It's so important that I want you to hear it from me today. Okay, here we go. Step number one, I want you to think back as far back in your life and story as you can remember. Times and moments that hurt you, write them down. Write them down as far back as you can go. Like my first memory was like 4 or 5 years old. Go back and write them down. This is important. Step two, don't minimize it or compare it to someone else's story. Just write it down. Because that's what we do, right? Compare it to somebody, they've been through worse. That's not a big deal. Don't do that. Don't try to figure out why something hurt you. Just admit that it did. This is hard for us guys especially because we grow up as little boys. It's like, get up. You're not hurt. Rub some dirt on it. Right? You're going to push back. Just admit that it did hurt. Number 4, consider what message that moment spoke to you about you, and then write that down. What's the message that came with that? Not just the moment and the pain. What was the message that came to you? Number 5, as you consider these moments, think about whether any other moments have suggested something similar to you about you. What is the theme? Right? We're looking for footholds here. What is the theme? Write that down. And number 6, never stop digging. We got to stay in our stories. What's your story? What would it look like for you today to begin to dig and to uncover things, not only the bad things you've done, but the bad and hurtful things that have been done to you, said about you, and then take all of that to Jesus? What would it look like for you to begin to experience Jesus in every single bit of that? See, here's our problem. We start to dig, we dig, we dig. Awareness is not healing. Yeah, we need to become aware of it, but that's not healing. We got to invite Jesus in to lead us into a journey back into and through our stories. Why? So that we can experience all that he came to do for us. He came to die on the cross for our sins, yes, but all, he also came to heal us, redeem us, restore us, set our captive hearts free, to bring us his hope, his life, his joy, and his freedom. He came. He came so that he could revisit and reinterpret those moments with you and for you, to help you see the messages, to see the agreements, to break those, to break down the footholds, to destroy the strongholds that the enemy has established in your life. I want to invite you to invite Jesus into that part, the rest of your story. I must tell you, watch what he begins to do in your life. It is a necessary part of the path that leads us to the life that Jesus came to bring us, which is the life that we all want. Hey, will you pray with me? Let me pray for us. Jesus, we come to you. Help us. And we're grateful, Jesus, for everything you did for us. You came, you did what we couldn't do for ourselves. And you went to that cross, and we've celebrated that today. We've remembered that today, that we're hopeless without what you did for us there. And so much gratitude. And Jesus, on the cross, you said, "It is finished," but you did not say that you were. Thank you for that. You overcame death, and your resurrection power lives in us. And Jesus, we need you. Would you come? Would you begin to open our eyes to see what's getting in the way? Would you bring your healing, your redemption, your restoration, your joy, your hope, your life, your freedom into every one of our hearts? Would you start it even before we walk out of here today? Would you come today and begin to set our captive hearts free? We love you, Jesus. Come. In your name we pray. Amen.